seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and today we got a packed show, which is typically the case for Tuesday. We always save NFL talk for Tuesday afternoons. You say it's April. What is there to talk about? Well, the draft is about 3 weeks away, just a little over 3 weeks away. And, of course, we're going to have the live draft show right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. That's become quite the tradition here on KOAL. So I'm going to be joined by Vinny Rondinelli in just a bit. We're going to start talking about what could be a very crazy top five in this year's draft. How many quarterbacks go in the top five? Originally, I would have said three, but it's starting to look more and more like it may very easily be four with J.J. McCarthy climbing draft boards. So we'll get into that coming up in just a bit. On the local end, we are going to talk Emory High School girls golf. We're going to be joined by Coach Casey Edgehouse. In fact, he's going to join us in just a moment. I want to make sure we get everything in, so let's pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports straight ahead. It's right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're going to talk high school golf here today on the Coach's Corner. There hasn't been a lot as far as the Region 12 season is concerned for the Emory Lady Spartans or the Corbin Lady Dinos. They've only gotten two meets in so far this season. They were supposed to start about a month ago on March 7th, so two out of five is what we're batting. But yesterday, they took a trip to the Carbon Country Club golf course, and we are going to talk Emory High School golf right now. Joining us over the phone, we have head coach Casey Edgehouse. Coach, always a pleasure. I appreciate you making time for us again. Thank you.
No problem. Glad to be on.
And like I said, Coach, you guys really have not had a lot of opportunities to get out there and actually participate in some of these in-region meets, which has been unfortunate. So far, just two competitions.
Yeah, it's the spring weather has kind of been a little bipolar. We get a week of good, and then it seems like on our days of our matches, it's snowing or raining or both.
So far, again, two meets. The March 7th meet, which was supposed to be the region opener at Delta, that one has been canceled, right? So that one's off the schedule.
Yep, they've canceled that one, and then we'll play two matches next week, one at home on Thursday, and then we'll play Richfield on Monday to make up our Richfield match.
So from here on out, you guys have a lot in a very short period of time.
Yeah, we're less than a month away from state, so we've got to pack in the rest of our matches to get them all caught up and get us ready for state.
It's kind of crazy how fast I know the spring sports season goes. Seems like every coach I talk to wishes they had a little bit more time, but it's just simply not the case, Coach. And so during all this time where you guys have been able to practice and not really compete, what are some of the things that you've noticed that the girls have improved on? I mean, hopefully you've been able to use that to your advantage in some realm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the girls are getting better every week that we're not playing. You don't get the same benefit of going and playing matches and learning what you need to work on. So you just kind of work on the basics. You work on around the greens. We can get in the armory and work on our full swings because they don't have range over here. But it's been nice to just kind of break everything down and work on the stuff that we think is going to happen. And then once we have our match, then we come back and say, okay, this is what we need to work on. This is where we struggled. So it's nice to be able to have a match that we can come back and work on stuff.
Two meets already down, Coach. We'll talk about the one yesterday, the most recent. You guys traveled to the Carbon Country Club. This is a familiar course for the girls. And as a team, you shoot a 434. How pleased were you with the team's performance?
You can always do better in golf. There's always a couple strokes that you leave out there. So I know that some of the girls, as I got talking to them at the end of the match, that they were really confident that they can cut strokes, not just a couple, like 10 to 15 strokes. There was a couple girls that said they had a couple misfortunes, bad bounces. So now that we can kind of get everything back to square, I think the girls are going to continually get better and learn from their mistakes this week.
Yeah, I have to believe that the Carbon course and the Emory course, I mean, that's the opportunity for you guys to really make some moves as far as region is concerned. But I also have to assume, Coach, not really being out and being able to compete, it didn't provide you guys much benefit going to Carbon.
It didn't. We'll definitely play better at home than we play everywhere else. And with a new region and new girls coming to our course that have never played here before, they're going to struggle. I know that there's three or four new teams in our region that have never played here before. So the Richfields, the Carbon, us, Canyonview, we'll have a little bit of an advantage over the rest of them. But it'll be an interesting day for sure.
Let's talk about some of the girls, Coach. You're led by Cheyenne Bingham yesterday. She shoots a 102. That was the low score for the round.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cheyenne comes on late. She had she shot 86 at state last year at the second day. So it just kind of takes her a little bit to get the wheels rolling. And then once that happens, watch out. I think she can cut 10, 15 strokes really easy. And she had two holes that she just kind of had a lapse of thinking and just made bad decisions, and that's kind of what cost her those 10 strokes. So she's going to be my number one. She's solid. I've got a couple freshmen that came in. I've got Randy Larcival and I've got Ava Leonard that have been playing varsity for me. So both of those two can shoot in that high 90s, low 90s if the day's right, and it's kind of exciting to see where the girls' programs went the last couple of years.
No question. I mean, you have so much youth that's actually performing quite well. And you mentioned Brandy Larcival. She shoots a 108 yesterday.
Yep. Brandy's a freshman. She hits the ball a ton. We just got to get her a little more consistent around the greens is probably the biggest place. And once we do that, she could be next year. The other girls will have to compete for that number one spot, I promise.
If we just look around the region, Coach, you have a couple of juggernauts, and we can call them that. I think it's a fair assessment. Richfield and Juab, I mean, these are two really, really good squads. Richfield shoots a 352 yesterday. Juab shoots a 375. You never want to go out and say you're playing for third, but, I mean, realistically, with where you guys are at now and the improvement that you guys are working towards, those are two teams that are just going to be difficult to compete with.
Yeah, like you said, it's hard to say that you want to compete for third, but we still have the same goal as we do every year: make it to state, make it to day two, give the girls a chance as a team. But there's about four teams in the state that are just, like you said, they're juggernauts. They're 100 strokes ahead of everybody else in the regions, and it shows. I mean, they've got five and six girls shooting in the 80s and low 90s, so that's tough to compete with. Those girls, not taking anything away from those girls, work hard, not any harder than our girls, but it's just sometimes there's just better teams.
Again, our guest right now, Coach Casey Edgehouse of the Emory Lady Sport and Golf Squad. Coach, with that being said, you take the young girls out there on the course and they get to watch a Richfield, they get to watch a Juab. Me personally, I think it's great for them to see what it's going to take to get to that level, right? Because that's how you learn. I mean, going up against the best.
Yeah, I honestly, because we have so many teams in our region, I love it when my girls get teamed up with a Richfield or a Juab. The Richfield girls are great girls, and it's as a golfer, I watch other people's swings, and I'm like, hey, I can do that a little different. That's how they did that. It's kind of nice to see that and see the progression as these girls are saying, hey, that's what she was doing. Can I do that? Yep, go do it. It's nice to have that peer to look up to, and especially as good as these girls are at playing golf.
You mentioned the new regions, Coach, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk to you about this yet. You know, obviously in basketball, football, baseball, volleyball, softball, you see a lot of these teams to begin with. For golf, I think it takes on a whole new meaning because you're actually seeing courses that you've never seen. It's completely different than just getting on a bus and going and playing on a baseball field or a softball field. In my mind, this affects golf maybe more than any other sport.
Yeah, for sure. The home court advantage for golf is huge because you just learn where you can miss, where you can hit. That's why I feel like when we play Millsite, we always play the best here because we just spent so much time here. And that can be the case in other sports, but it's the same field. Just when you're playing other sports in golf, it's a completely different layout.
What seems to be the toughest course that is now implemented within the region?
For us, honestly, it's probably Millsite.
Yeah, that would probably be the case for a lot of teams. I would expect.
Yeah, I would say that, like I said, the four teams that have just came into our region, they'll really struggle with the course, especially that, because they haven't came over and played a practice round. This will be their biggest challenge of the year.
So you mentioned kind of the schedule, Coach. Two meets a week now after we get past this week. Two meets a week leading up to the Region 12 tournament, which I believe is going to be at Meadowbrook, if I'm not mistaken, right at the end of the month?
Yes, it'll be at Meadowbrook. We played there for boys state last year. It's real similar to the course that they played last year at state, so it's pretty basic. Kind of lays out just fine for our girls. They can kind of swing and get after it. Not a lot of trouble. More like a Richfield or a Carbon.
Now the region meet is also going to be at the same place as the state meet, right? That's going to be at Meadowbrook as well.
Yes. Yep. Essentially, we just get a practice round.
Yeah. So, how often, Coach, do you anticipate you guys going down and playing at Meadowbrook ahead of the region and the state championship?
So we're going to try to go play once before, and then we usually try to go up the day before our region championship, and then we play then, and then we go up the day before our state championship and play then. So we should be able to play it four times before state.
I know I asked you this before we hopped on the air, but I'm going to go back to it. With you guys having so much practice time early on, I'm sure the girls look at the schedule now saying they get two meets a week. That's got to be a relief for them to actually be able to get out on the course if the schedule holds up.
Yeah, as long as the weather kind of holds up, they're excited to go and play some of these matches. It's always disappointing when you get that phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, they had to cancel because they got 4 inches of snow. So going forward, I think the girls are looking forward to get out and playing a little more. I know that they were, even with the weather being a little cold yesterday, they still had a good day, and they just love being out on the course.
And we can end with this, Coach. As we sit here on April 2nd, give me your assessment of where you guys are basically a month into the season.
Yeah, I still feel like we're just breaking the surface, honestly. I know that we can, as a team, I feel like we can drop 40 strokes. Any match, we can drop 40 strokes, which still doesn't get us into that Richfield Juab range, but it definitely puts us ahead of some of these other teams.
Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I really do appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Casey Edgehouse of the Emory Lady Sport and Golf Team. Next meet coming up April 11th. That'll be at the Millsite Golf Course. We've got to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. It is Football Tuesday, so we will focus on the NFL. We have the draft coming up at the end of the month, and of course, you're going to be able to listen to that live right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. So we'll talk some NFL draft when we return. Also, still taking qualifiers for the National Championship Board, as we are giving away $1,000, teaming up with Richard Hackwell at Farm Bureau Financial Services. We'll take some more qualifiers right now. Dial in at 637-5625. Your chance to win $1,000 right now, 637-5625. It's Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Sutherland Studios.
Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios. And as we hit April, pretty much draft talk is what's going to dominate the league over the next 3.5 weeks or so. The draft coming up April 25th. Of course, we will have live coverage for you right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. It's become quite the tradition. The other tradition is bringing in Vinny Rondinelli every Tuesday to talk NFL football. And Vinny, the draft is it. That's what we have now for about the next month.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, you know, and it gets kind of it's a weird season, right? We talk about it every year, but you get all these guys, a lot of them are on the internet. The internet's give a forum to tons of people now that are all draft experts. There's only two or three that me and you actually listen to, right?
Right.
But everybody's a draft expert. And the executives are not talking.
No, because everything's out in the open now.
Yeah,
you can't talk, right?
You can't talk. I mean, the internet, it just... So they're locked in the building. They're having their meetings. Food's brought in. They don't leave their big boardroom. They got a big board on the wall. Scouts are arguing. Position coaches are breaking down tape. It's all about the draft. And the NFL, like we've talked, they're a marketing genius. And here they are making this a big event. It's huge. We have shows dedicated to it. We have, you know, websites that have draft guys now. And,
yeah.
You know, only a couple of them, like we talk about, there's a couple guys that actually were in a boardroom. So when you listen to them, you're like, okay, this guy was actually there. But it is incredible. So it's always a smokescreen. So right now, for me, the biggest one right now, are you buying J.J. McCarthy in the top four?
I have not bought J.J. McCarthy as an NFL quarterback for the last 2 years. And you and I do differ on this. And I know that Harbaugh your boy Jim Harbaugh speaks very highly of him. He should.
Well, he should. He's trying to trade out. He's trying to get somebody to jump up.
I was going
to
say the ideal situation right now for Harbaugh, this is why I don't take anything he's take it with a grain of salt. The ideal situation for the Chargers would be J.J. McCarthy goes 2 or 3. And the reason that would be so ideal is because then you would have the Arizona Cardinals more than likely trade out of a 4 spot. Because if McCarthy was to go 2 or 3, let's say Caleb Williams goes 1. Or can we agree Williams is going to be the number one pick?
Yeah, I think McCarthy's going to be the 4th quarterback picked. I really believe that, Jordan.
But let's say, okay, so but Williams is number one.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's foregone.
I think Jaden Daniels is the second best quarterback in this class.
Okay, and I'm going to take the May kid.
Okay. Flip him either which way.
Either one, yeah.
Okay. That's the point I'm trying to make. If McCarthy was to move up into the top 4, that means, well, top 3. That means that either May or Daniels would be available at 4, and the Cardinals are going to get a king's ransom for that 4th pick, which then means you sitting at number 5 may get Marvin Harrison Jr. So to me, the only way I see Marvin Harrison Jr. being there at 5 or the Chargers having a chance to grab him is if McCarthy somehow does climb up into the top 4. I think if you're a Charger fan, you hope and pray. I think if you're Jim Harbaugh, you lie through your teeth and say that this kid is the second coming of Tom Brady, which he's not. I don't buy him as a first-round quarterback. I never have. But for you, if he does, that's going to reshape the entire draft, Vinny, because that means the top 4 picks will be quarterbacks. If he
absolutely. So the Chargers really, and you know, everybody knows I'm a Chargers homer, but they're in a great spot right now because they've cleared some salary cap space, excuse me, and they're sitting in a perfect spot because if there is a run, you're going to get Marvin Harrison. Oh, I think hands down is the best player in the draft.
I agree.
Hands down. I know the quarterback is king. I've watched Caleb Williams. I'm a USC guy. There's no doubt. Marvin Harrison, no doubt, best player in the draft. So he might fall into our laps. The other situation here becomes Arizona's trying to rebuild, right? And they overachieved last year. Let's be honest. They really did. They really overachieved. So good job by the first-year head coach and GM. Now, if 1, 2, 3 goes, I expect him to go. I think it's going to be quarterbacks, and I think it's Jaden, it's Daniels or May, any order you want, preference, whatever. I think the 3 quarterbacks are gone, and then at number 4, we have something interesting. I think the Cardinals stay put, and I think they take Harrison because he's the best player in the draft, and they don't have an NFL caliber receiver on the roster.
They don't. No.
They don't. They really do not have. I went and looked at their roster, and I was like, I don't even. We watched a lot of football, and I didn't know who those guys were. So I'm thinking, okay, now we're at number 5. And the 5th pick comes in. Harrison's gone. 3 quarterbacks are gone. The ideal situation for McCarthy, the dream situation for Charger fans, is the Minnesota Vikings have made an attempt to get more picks, right? 11 and 23. They didn't get 11 and 23 unless they were trying to move up. And it's a perfect situation for McCarthy. He's in Minnesota. Kevin O'Connell's one of the best quarterback coaches in the game. Highly respected guy, right?
Yep.
Sam Darnold's there on a 1-year deal as a bridge starter anyways.
That's all he is.
So McCarthy gets a year to learn with Kevin O'Connell and say, hey, you just sit back and relax here unless there's an injury. And then when his time comes, it's Justin Jefferson. Darisaw, the left tackle, is a great player. It's a good situation.
Jefferson, I love Jordan Addison.
Yeah, Addison's a great player.
Yeah.
You're looking at this, you're going, hey, wait a minute. And I think Aaron Jones is there, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was like, okay.
Correct, yep.
And Kevin O'Connell.
Yep.
One of the best offensive coaches in the game. So the dream scenario for Vikings fans, McCarthy, and Charger fans is 1, 2, 3 goes expected, 4 goes to Harrison, and the Vikings move up to 5. They take McCarthy, they get their guy.
Well, let me ask you this. Are there enough holes within this Cardinals roster that, I'll say McCarthy goes 2 or 3, and you're sitting there, and it's going to be Daniels or May, either which one, right, sitting at number 4 if McCarthy was to slide in. One of those two guys would be there at 4. Are the Cardinals in a spot to where you have to at least entertain the idea of passing on Harrison and getting, I don't know what it would be. You'd probably get 2 first-round picks for that.
2 first-round picks, you would. Yeah, probably 2 first-round picks. They have to entertain it.
I think you have to. I think, because I agree with you that Marvin Harrison's best player in the draft, and rarely do you have the opportunity to grab the best player with the 4th pick. We've seen it with the 2nd and 3rd often, because rarely, I think you agree with me on this, rarely have we viewed the must-have quarterback as the best player in the draft, right?
Yeah, that's very rare.
That we do. So I remember going back talking about Nick Bosa, right? he fell into the 49ers' lap at number two. They got the best player in the draft picking number two, right? Mm-hmm. It happens often. I think the Cardinals are far enough behind within that division that you would have to entertain that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see, I was reading one of the guys that both of us like, and it was an actual NFL scout in Daniel Jeremiah. He was writing up that, you know, hey, he put on Twitter, this is not a smokescreen. McCarthy is moving up draft boards. Everybody he talked to, of course, you know, these insiders probably do talk to a lot of inside people, but, you know, it was clear, he was a clear number four. It was clear Williams. It was clear, you know, Daniels and May. In different orders, you know, Daniels and May. There were some teams, whatever, but those three were the consensus top three. And then it was a big leap to four. So at that point, does somebody want to move up? Has he gained enough steam that somebody wants to move up, or they try to wait it out? I mean, at 12 and 13 is Denver and Las Vegas. Are they waiting for someone to fall in their lap? Which brings another question. Do we end up with Bo Nix and Michael Penix being first-round picks?
That's what I was going to say. So often at the quarterback position, teams draft for need rather than value.
They overdraft. The quarterback is always going to be overdrafted.
Always. And so I like Michael Penix. His 40 time was incredible, by the way. I think mm-hmm. he ran a sub 4.6, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he ran sub 4.5.
Is it a sub 4.5? Yeah. My goodness. I mean, he was lightning. So, and I like Bo Nix. I like Bo Nix a lot. And if we look at Oregon quarterbacks, as you know, they've performed pretty well, right?
Yeah, that's and Sean Payton's done pretty well with quarterbacks.
Yeah, he has. And I think that either Penix or Nix, I think Nix would be a better fit. But either or, I think you're okay. I think it is possible that I think it's legitimately possible we see six quarterbacks go in the first round. And if you would have asked me this 2 months ago, I'd have said no way, because I didn't view McCarthy as a first-round pick. Bo Nix, I thought, latter in, maybe. Penix, to me, was going to be a top 15 pick in the draft. Jaden Daniels, kind of, this last year, he moved up draft boards very fast. But nobody was pegging Jaden Daniels as a top five pick at the beginning of the season. Nobody was.
Absolutely not. I don't think they were even up the first month of the season.
Probably not.
And he come on strong. You know, again, we've talked about it at nauseam, but you're always going to overdraft the quarterback, because if you don't have one, you got nothing. You've got to try, because if you don't have a quarterback, you ain't got nothing. So you're going to keep swinging until you hit one. All of them have things you like. You know, the situation is obviously a big deal, right? The Bears have a great supporting staff now. You know, Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, DJ Moore. So if Williams ends up going there, you know, we'll see how that turns out, but it seems like it's a fit. You know, Washington and New England are going to be interesting to me, because New England does have a bridge quarterback, right? They signed Brissett.
Yes.
So, you know, whoever gets there probably don't have to play the first year. You know, you can probably sit back and watch. What happens to Washington, Dan Quinn? What do they do there? I find that they're a fascinating spot for me. They're the number two team. They had a lot of cap money. I don't think they spent a lot of it, but they kind of remade who they're trying to be. But what are they trying to be?
I don't know. I know that they've been one of the most improved teams, I think, in the offseason just through free agency. I'd probably put them in the top four or five of teams that have improved. They did spend some money. And they brought in, I think, they brought in culture guys. And I think when you look at the Commanders and you just go over who they added this offseason, they tried. You
know, yeah.
They tried. Yeah. I think through free agency, they made some nice waves. And
there is some energy there, right?
There is.
They have the young, hotshot GM. Yep. He was the number one candidate on most people's boards, yep, right? They got a guy, the Dan Quinn, right, wrong, or indifferent. He's got the energy.
And they got the right owner.
Yeah, and a great owner. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there. So they're interesting, right? They're the second pick in the draft.
Yeah. And you're going to have to choose between Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Now, I think if you look at ceiling, I like Daniels' ceiling a little bit more. I like the trajectory of what we've seen over the last 5 years. That's one of the things that stands out to me about Jaden Daniels. If you look at where he was his freshman season, go back to where he was at Arizona State, and you start to see him, he gradually got better, right? It wasn't as if he had just a phenomenal Heisman Trophy season and it went through the roof. No, there was gradual improvement. And I've kind of compared his arc and where he was at year by year, I think it's very comparable to Joe Burrow.
It is. It
now,
really
I'm not saying that he has Burrow's arm. I'm not saying that he is Joe Burrow, but I'm saying the gradual improvement from his freshman season to his final season in college, it
looks that way. He was incredible at LSU. The numbers were incredible.
He was fantastic.
And Burrow had a lot of weapons. Let's not forget about this.
Yeah,
Burrow's
sure
never,
did.
You know, he didn't carry the team himself.
No.
And he has it in Cincinnati. They have a lot of weapons.
Yep.
It's nice when you walk into a situation and Boyd, Higgins, Chase, Mixon, Whitworth, there's a lot of good players on that team. So Daniels did improve incredibly. And then I think for sure he's got a stronger arm than Joe Burrow. And he's a much better athlete.
Yep.
Now, to me, he looks spindly.
I agree with that.
He looks spindly. And I have that problem with Penix. To me, they look like they're going to get beat up. I just don't see an NFL frame. But, you know, you have the greatest dietitians and strength coaches in the world. Do they, you know, how much of that do they add? Penix has had injury issues.
He wasn't healthy in the national championship game, and that was obvious. He missed some throws. I mean,
he missed some, and he started Indiana, if I remember correctly. He's had major injuries in his career. So these guys that have played the whole time, you know, when you look at it, and I think May measured in, 6'4", 230?
He's got the right build.
Yeah, he looks like an NFL quarterback on the hoof, right?
You know who else did? Mitch Trubisky did.
But I think May played more football than Trubisky.
He did. Trubisky only played 12 games.
Yeah, he only played 12 games. And Mitch Trubisky, you know, again, they overdrafted? Sure they did, but they were taking their swing at it. And Trubisky's going to be a backup quarterback in the NFL.
Yep.
He's still in the NFL.
Yep.
So it's not a total miss. You know, so we'll see about that. I like McCarthy. I see NFL throws when I see that NFL offense.
I just don't believe in him.
I didn't see a lot of slip screens. I didn't see a lot of air raid. I saw throwing to tight ends on play action. I saw a lot of seam routes. Those are throws he's going to have to make in the NFL. And I saw them. He just didn't have to throw it.
He didn't have to throw it.
And that's a big knock on him. But I love the fit with O'Connell. I think if he goes to Minnesota, you're going to see an NFL quarterback.
Well, when you say you like the fit, first thing that pops off of my mind, if I'm not mistaken, quarterbacks in O'Connell's offense, they drop back and play action about 73% of the time, 73, 74%.
Something like that, yeah.
It's an outstanding number, right? And when you go back and you look at Blake Corum when he was at Michigan, or with Blake Corum, McCarthy was most effective when Corum was involved in the offense. And I remember texting you during the semifinal game against Alabama, give Corum the ball. Please. Once Corum took over a little bit, found his rhythm, play action, and that's when you saw McCarthy make those plays, right? But it was all based off of the run game. You mentioned Aaron Jones in Minnesota. Yeah, it would make a lot of sense. It really would. But in O'Connell's offense, you better be able to work out of the play action, getting outside the pocket. And if McCarthy can do that, sure.
I love the fit there. I really do. I just think those are NFL throws. A lot of teams, they don't make them. And, you know, let's not forget, this guy played a lot of big-time football, and I think we overlook that sometimes at quarterback.
I agree with that.
We think, well, you know, he didn't play a lot of that team wasn't very good. Well, you're the quarterback of the team. You should be a winner. The NFL wants a winner. And this is a guy who won a lot of football games, big-time football games.
I can say that, though, about every one of the quarterbacks outside of Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams did not win very many big games in college.
He did not.
Bo Nix did. Michael Penix did.
Michael Penix got into that game.
McCarthy did. Jaden Daniels, they didn't win a lot of big games at LSU.
They didn't. And Caleb Williams didn't, let's be honest. We live in Utah.
You know, I was up in Salt Lake, and I was talking to a perfect stranger about football. We just happened to be, I was sitting at the mall, my wife was kind of doing her thing, and I had a Ram hat on, and we started talking football. And he asked me, he said, are you from L.A.? And I said, I'm a Utah guy. And he says, okay. He says, I was going to ask you about Caleb Williams. And I said, well, I'm curious as to your thoughts. He says, no quarterback who goes 0-4 against the University of Utah is worth the number one overall pick, in my opinion. I never thought about that. Yeah. You know what, though?
There's something to be said about that. Think about that. Those are big-time games. They didn't win them.
No, they didn't.
McCarthy won them.
Yeah. He did.
And the roster's part of it. The quarterback gets too much credit, too much blame. I get that. But in college football, you should be a dog. You should be a winner.
And I didn't get that. And you know, I think that you got to look at, some may view that as a slight with the University of Utah. It's not, because I think that you go up against one of the best defensive-minded coaches in the country in Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah, very respected. He's very respected defensive coach.
So it's not a slight at the University of Utah, but I think it's more of a slight of, look, every time you played Utah, it was a big game, and you failed each time.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries be damned. That's a real thing.
That's a real thing. I mean, there's a big-time part about this. Now, I think we both agree that the two best players in the draft, in our minds, are Harrison and Bowers.
I agree.
I think Brock Bowers is not getting enough love. And here's a guy that, you know, I was talking to my favorite football coach. I told my dad, I said, hey, dude, go back and watch the national title game. Here's Kirby Smart. Here's Nick Saban. There's 35, 40 NFL players on that field that day. The best player on the field was a freshman named Brock Bowers.
Yep.
I was watching that game going, this guy's the best player on his field.
So let's pause right there because we've talked a lot about quarterbacks, but there are a lot of position players. And I think when you look anywhere from 5 through 11, Vinny, there's a lot of movement. And I think there are teams that could go quarterback, but there's teams that could definitely use a position player. We're going to pause one more time. We'll come back. More NFL draft talk coming up here on Football Tuesday.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios. Love this talk. The idea of the draft in the game, I think is what is so fascinating. We just talked about quarterbacks. We talked about teams 1 through 4. If Arizona does not move out of that number 4 spot, just write it with a Sharpie. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If they don't move out of that 4 spot. But then it gets interesting here because your Chargers are picking 5. They obviously don't need a quarterback. But if you just look at the draft order, Chargers 5, Giants 6, Titans, Falcons, Bears, Jets, Vikings. 5 through 11 is important because the Vikings would be the most sensible trade partner for the Chargers if they were to move back. Then you have the Broncos and the Raiders after that, two more teams looking at quarterbacks. I cannot possibly see the Chargers trading with a division rival to help them get a quarterback. So it's got to be Minnesota or it's no one, right?
Or the Jets. Maybe they move up for one of the receivers. It's interesting to see who's going to value Neighbors if Harrison goes off the board, Adunze, some of these teams. What does Atlanta do? They got to have edge help. It's going to be, you know, the Titans. You know the Titans want to build an offensive line. Jawalt, one of your guys, you know, being a Notre Dame homer.
Yeah.
He might be the third best player in the draft.
He might be the second.
Yeah. He's very good.
He might be the second best player. I think when you look at it, left tackle in itself, well, let's just look at some of the left tackles that have come out of Notre Dame as of late. Look at some of the linemen that have come out of Notre Dame as of late. It's been, you know, Quentin Nelson, Mike McGlinchey's been really good, right? Ronnie Stanley's been great at left tackle. And I do think that colleges with pedigrees, I think it matters. I think it's a real thing. So this is why I bring up Brock Bowers. And this is the danger of your Chargers moving out of 5. I can't think of a more perfect fit for the Chargers outside of Brock Bowers. Can you?
No. I mean, Harrison, maybe. Especially
of course.
Losing. Yeah, this guy, you know, the value of a guy like that is, I mean, you just look around the NFL playoffs. We've seen Laporta. We've seen Kittle. We've seen Kelsey. All these guys in big-time games. What do they have? They have great tight ends.
Yep.
Not all of them are great blockers. I mean, Kelsey don't even block. Let's be honest.
No.
He's a slot receiver.
Yes.
But they put him in motion, and you have to guard him with somebody. If you guard him with a corner, well, then guess what? You got a safety on your other receiver. So there's just so many matchup problems for him, especially when you put him in motion. And this is a guy, when we were watching the film, I mean, literally, we were watching these games and we're thinking, this is the best player on the field.
Since Brock Bowers was a freshman.
He's been dominant. Dominant in the SEC,
yes.
As a freshman.
Yes. The term yak, right? There has not been, this includes Kyle Pitts. We can include Dalton Kincaid, we can include Laporta, we can include Michael Mayer, we can include all these guys. There has not been a tight end over the last, so Pitts is going into what, year 4, right?
Yeah.
So if we go over the last 4 years, there has not been a tight end that has been more of a yak threat in college football than Brock Bowers, and he's done it in the most elite conference. Like it or not, the SEC is the most elite conference,
yeah, they are.
Right? So for me, you know, when we look at the Chargers, if Marvin Harrison is off that board, and you have Brock Bowers sitting there at 5, The idea of moving back to 11 comes with a risk because of who you would be drafting behind in the New York Jets.
Yeah, that's
right.
And
don't think for a second that if Bowers is there at 10, the Jets are running to the podium.
They probably will be, or they're going to have to go tackle, right? Because they don't have a left tackle. Aaron Rodgers is looking around.
They have Tyron Smith.
Yeah, well,
if he stays healthy, they went out and they grabbed Smith.
They did. But you can't plan on that. You can't plan on Tyron Smith blocking for Aaron Rodgers. The history just doesn't show that.
But it's
and
also,
then what do you have on the other side?
Fair.
They'd re-sign Becton.
Becton
was a first round pick.
Who was a stud. Yeah. He just can't stay healthy.
And they didn't re-sign Becton, yeah. So there's always that. What do the Bears do? They don't need a receiver now. They traded for Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. How far does Odunze fall? Where does Neighbors fall into this?
Yeah.
What are the Giants going to do?
Well, the Giants
they got to get a receiver, right?
Well, they could go quarterback as
they
well.
They could, but whoever the quarterback is, who's he throwing it to?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's three tackles that I would look at. I think you got Fashanu from Penn State,
yeah,
and you got
Penn
Latham coming out of Alabama.
I'm not high on him after watching. You know, I'm watching that playoff game and Michigan beat him up pretty good, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know about this guy.
But you have three though. He'll be considered in the top three, right? He's going to be one of the
yes,
top,
he's gonna be, yeah. He's going to be a top 15 pick, top 20, anyways,
top
depending
20
on
pick.
Board falls, right?
When you lose Brock Bowers, when he comes off of the board, to me, there is a significant drop of what he can do, what he has done, and what is next. I think there's a significant drop.
And it's
going
to be fascinating, right? Because we're in this top five picks, I think four quarterbacks go.
Yes.
I really believe that. And I think Harrison's the other guy. So how does this happen? And so these things are going to keep moving, and Minnesota's going to try. How do we know that the Giants don't call it six and tell the Chargers, hey, I want to get up one spot because I can just get my guy? Okay, well, I'm on a King's ransom. Because guess what? I can do what I want.
I can move back to 11. Yep.
Maybe don't get a King's ransom. But what about Neighbors? Neighbors is a really interesting prospect. He's like a clone of Ja'Marr Chase. When you look at their pro days, their production, everything. I think the difference is Chase is a half inch taller.
Well, and to your point about Marvin Harrison being there at four, not being there at five, Neighbors would be in play for the Chargers at five as well.
Absolutely. Bowers. Joe Walt could be in.
He could. Joe Walt could also be.
You're looking
there.
At a GM from Baltimore and Harbaugh. And then, so let's drop back into, you know, 12 and 13. What does Denver and Las Vegas do? Are they trying to move up? They got to get in front of Minnesota.
Yeah, the problem.
Who wants to move back? Is it the Bears at nine? Do they say, hey, look.
Well, it has to be.
Yeah, they say, well, you know what? You guys want to get up here and you want to get something going? Let's go. There's a fear that if they go 1-2-3 in Arizona, takes Harrison, which I see happening, then what about the Giants looking at a quarterback going, hey, you know, Danny Dimes isn't panning out here. Let's take our shot.
I could see the Giants going quarterback at six. So it, I guess the game within the game, and I think that's the...
Yeah, picks 4 through 13, I think are going to be... There's going to be a lot of... I see a lot of movement.
But this begs the question. And I think it's perfect for the Chargers because the Cardinals, if they want Marvin Harrison... And
he's on the board.
He's on the board. He's there.
He's in play.
If you move back, you're not going to get him.
Well, let me ask you something different. Is New England that daring that they wouldn't draft a quarterback at the number three spot? I mean, they could. I mean, who are their receivers? I mean, could we see Harrison going three and then this whole draft blowing up?
It's possible.
Wow.
It's possible.
Wow.
Then at that point, Neighbors comes off at four, and once again, you're in the same spot of looking at Brock Bowers at number five. If that
or two quarterbacks are on the board now because the third pick wasn't
well,
one.
That's a good
now
point.
There's two quarterbacks
that's
on the
a good
board.
Point.
So,
but again, if you are the Chargers and you move back and you value one of the three guys, if you're right now at the grease board in Los Angeles, if it has Harrison, Neighbors, and Bowers, which I would expect that's what it would look like, right?
Probably.
Okay. The question is, do you move out of the five spot or you just take your guy? Do you simplify this whole process? Because we've heard draft stories, Vinny. We've heard about this before. Teams moving back thinking they're going to be able to get their guy, but you don't know what's going on in the other war rooms. You don't know if someone's going to jump you. You're talking about New England blowing up this whole draft. It's very possible, right? You want to talk about the Patriot way, that would be the Patriot way. How many times have we been watching the draft in New England draft someone and we look at each other and say, what?
Who the hell's Cole Strange? Remember that?
Yeah. Sean McVay said that, right?
Who the hell's Cole Strange?
Like, I mean, it happens. And so, to me, the question, this is the question on this particular segment. Do you value picks enough to move back and risk not getting your guy? Or do you simplify this and say, he's our guy for the next 5 to 10 years? See, that's the way I approach the draft. If you got a guy sitting there and you look at him and you say, this position is shored up for the next decade, you draft that guy. I've complained to you about the Rams not drafting Creed Humphreys for years, right? Yeah. Because you passed on an opportunity to shore up the center position for 10 years. You passed on it. Who took advantage of it? The Chiefs. And look what's happened ever since, right? So if you have a shot to shore up a position for 5 to 10 years, you have to take it.
You have to take it.
I don't think you move back.
That's solid logic. And we're going to see how they view that. We're going to see how teams view that. And because I think there's some real can't miss prospects in the front end of this draft. There's every year. But especially with teams reaching on quarterbacks, you mentioned three tackles. Two of them I think are can't miss.
Yeah.
I think there's three receivers that are dynamite. Because I think Odunze is that good too.
Odunze is a good ball player.
Odunze is incredible. So there's five can't miss guys right there. Yeah, Bowers, there's six.
Yeah, Bowers.
And we didn't even look at the defense yet because Verse and Dallas Turner most likely look like guys that are can't miss as well. So now we've got seven. If you take four quarterbacks, we're going to pick 11 where you're looking at them going, I love these kids.
I've seen so many misses in the draft, and I've seen so many teams just completely flub things up. That I'm always the guy that says take the safe pick. I'm always
that
there's
guy. Always that GM that goes, yeah, that's a great ceiling, but what's the floor?
Yep.
I got a high floor here. I'll just take my guy. I'm going to take my guy. We're going to see. And this is going to be new because we have a lot of new GMs. We have a lot of new head coaches. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, the top five picks are guys that have been in their job. The only one that's been in their job a year is Arizona.
Yep.
There's a new GM or a new head coach. Well, I guess not Chicago.
They're not picking in the top five, though. Oh, well, they got number one. Ryan Poles, correct.
You know, you got...
But it's a foregone conclusion.
Commanders, you got the Patriots, you got the Chargers. Look, these are new duos.
The Bears don't hold the keys to the draft.
No, they really don't. I think they're locked in and it's pretty much over. And...
Washington holds the keys to the draft right now.
Where are they going to go? Yeah. In New England. Would I be shocked if Harrison goes 3? I think Harrison go 1, personally. I think he's the best player in the draft. And I stand by that. But where does he fall?
Well, if you told me to rank the players in this draft, and some people would tell me I'm completely crazy, but I'll tell you who my top 3 players in this draft are, and none of them are quarterbacks.
Oh, absolutely. I'm with you.
Marvin Harrison, Joe Alton, Brock Bowers.
Put them in any order you want.
Yeah, I don't care what order you put them in.
I'm with you. It's Harrison, Bowers, and Alt for me as well. I think they're the 3 best players in the draft. And the one that's not getting talked about, I think, ends up in the top 10 that I love is the kid out of Alabama. I think the Turner kid playing off the edge is dynamite.
I like the tackle out of Penn State as well, Fashion. Yeah. I like him a lot. In fact, there was talk that this kid was going to be a top 3, top 4 pick going into the year. We've seen his stock.
In some years, he probably would be.
He probably would be.
If it wasn't a quarterback thing, he probably would be. And you know, people love Neighbors. Hey, Neighbors is legit, man. He is dynamite.
Dunze's legit.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be a very, very... And they all are in their own ways, and we always say that, but no, this year...
And I think edge rush, I think we're going to see a run in the teens on edge rush, and there are some guys that are legit on the edge as well, right? And we know how important that position has become. There's some Pac-12 guys out there that are going to go in the first round.
I love that UCLA kid. I think
he's fantastic.
He's going to be phenomenal.
Yep. There's a lot of talent.
And the Florida State
kid,
how about Verse, man? He's getting a lot of love. That Turner kid, I watched him, and I was just like, yeah, that guy's got it. Saban said it, and for me, if whatever Saban says is gospel. And
yeah, he's pretty good.
I'm with you on that. So yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun, and the quarterback just adds the intrigue, even though they're going to be overdrafted, which we could both agree.
The quarterback position changes the complexity of the draft year in and year out.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be overdrafted. They're going to be overvalued. They get too much credit. They get too much blame. But it's just the way it is. The NFL is a quarterback-driven league. If you ain't got one, you do what you can to get one.
You know, and as we are talking before we end the show, speaking of moving back, right? So you don't know who's going to fall down draft boards. We see someone that we think might be a top 15 pick fall all the way, right? It happens often. Can you see Penix or Nix becoming a guy that a team like the Broncos trade back into the first round and grab late so they get the extra fifth year on them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's teams that are going to do that. I think the Broncos are going to have to reach because they don't have any picks. I think the Broncos have to take a quarterback because they've torn their roster down, which they had to do, eating $85 million.
Yep.
I don't expect them to be competitive. That's tough. I get it. A lot of Bronco fans around. I'm not sure. We've been hard on the Raiders, but I think they've made positive strides this offseason.
I think it's been a good offseason.
And we've mentioned that. In the past, we've been on the Raiders. We'll see how interim head coach holds up over a full season. But they're desperate. What do they have?
Yeah, so that 12 to 13
especially spot. Denver. I mean, literally, Jarrett Stidham's on the roster right now. That's not going to do.
Yeah.
So how do you go into a draft? And I don't believe they have a second-round pick anyways.
Well, and Aiden O'Connell is your top quarterback for the Raiders. Same situation.
You know, and Minshew, well, I guess Vegas has Minshew, and he is a bridge quarterback, right? If you were to draft a quarterback, they don't have to play right away because Minshew's a gamer. So I can see the Raiders saying, hey, I'll take a guy and I'll sit him.
Maybe Penix.
We'll just sit here.
So they're the team that you can see trading back into the first round and grabbing a quarterback.
It could be. And Denver has to do something. They don't have a quarterback. Jarrett Stidham is not an NFL starting quarterback.
I'm calling Bo Nix.
There's a fit there.
There is a fit.
There's a fit there. He does, you know, a bigger version of Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that knock on Brees when the Chargers drafted him was, system quarterback Purdue, don't throw the ball down the field, blah, 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 blah. Had success in San Diego, and then he blossomed under Peyton. You know, he's really one that brought him up. And Peyton, before that, people forget, he's the one who built Tony Romo.
Yep. Bo Nix is a fit.
Bo Nix is a fit. He could be number 12. Maybe he's the surprise pick. We're like, ooh. But they have to. They have to try.
Yeah.
What else do they have?
There's really no other pick that makes sense. There's really not. To me, it's Denver, Bo Nix. That's where I'm sitting at right now. Now, we have a month to go. Realize that? We got a month before the NFL draft.
Crazy.
But 24 days away, 23 days away, and we're going to be talking a whole lot more about this. See, this is the game within the game, right? Mm-hmm. So, basically, the point of this segment, do you just draft your guy or do you try to accumulate more assets? I'm of the mindset, you get your guy.
We're going to see how these top five picks shake out, and we're going to see a lot of the future of what these franchises look like.
A lot of game changers. Vinny, it's always fun to get you in. I know we're going to be talking more about the draft. I love getting into the depth picks.
Yeah.
And we can tackle that over the next few weeks. We're definitely going to have time because everybody knows you make your bread rounds 3 through 5. That's where the bread's been made.
Absolutely. I think picks 20 through 110 are all the same. I really believe it. I think they're clumped together that close. I think rounds back half of round one all the way through round four, I think we're going to see tons of movement because I think they're going to be clustered that close.
Great to get you back in studio. Let's do it again next week.
Absolutely. Always good to talk to you.
Going to do it for us here on Football Tuesday, live from the Sutherland Studios. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Until then, be safe. We are out.
Serving all of Eastern Utah, this is News Talk 107.3 FM and 750 AM. KOAL. Price.